Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Chatting with Sherry. This week we welcome author Carrie Thompson, and she's going to chat about her new novel, Mirror X. Welcome, Carrie.
Hi, Sherry. Thank you. It's great to be here.
Oh, it's great to have you here. I'm really excited. Your book sounds really fun.
Oh, thank you. It was really fun to write.
Tell the audience a bit about yourself and your background.
Okay, well, I'm actually a high school English teacher, too, besides being an author. I'm married. I have a son who's 16. I started writing, I think, back in about 2005. I started working on my first novel, but I never got through, so I kept working again on a second one and finally got my first novel written, and that got published in 2012. That was called Amateur Angel. I write young adult novels. And then I just got a rebook deal with a different publisher, Entangle Teen, and the first book, Mirror X, just came out on Monday, so a week from, actually not yesterday, but a week before that.
That's exciting. I mean, when a new book comes out, it's like a new baby being born. Aren't you just so excited about it?
Yeah, it is really exciting. There's always so much to do, and it's stressful, but at the same time, it's great. And, you know, people have been really supportive, and I spent some time with my publisher in Las Vegas a couple weeks ago for our convention, our conference that we have there, and everybody was really excited for me. So, yeah, it's been great.
You haven't gotten your books yet, though, right? Because I haven't got mine for my new book yet.
I haven't gotten what?
Have you gotten any copies of your book yet?
Oh, I did get some copies.
Oh, you did?
It
wow,
came out,
that.
Yeah, it came out as an ebook first, and it's still only available as an ebook, but eventually it will be in print. What happened is I was at a conference in Las Vegas, the one that I was there with my publisher for, and then after that they had me go to the American Library Association conference, which was also in Las Vegas, so I spent 10 days straight in Las Vegas. Got a lot of stories there. 10 days in Las Vegas is way too long for me. I say 2
yeah,
days is good enough.
That's a long time.
When I was at, that is a really long time to be in Las Vegas because I'm not a gambler and I'm not a big drinker and I don't smoke. So those three things are what people tend to do in Las Vegas.
True.
So anyway, when I was there at the ALA conference, the American Library Association conference, my publisher had me do a signing, so they were able to get some ARCs, a bunch of them printed, and I did this great signing where they had probably 30 or 40 books, but I was able to keep a couple for myself. They're still ARCs, so the cover is not quite the way the quality is going to be when it's actually released to the public and they can buy it. But I do have a couple copies, so it was fun to hold and actually go, wow, here's my book.
I know.
So I saw it for the first time. Yeah, in Las Vegas.
Yeah, I think that's one of the big satisfactions as an author is when you hold it as an actual book in your hand. It, you know, e-books are great because you can carry them around and all that stuff, but it doesn't give you that same oomph as you get when you're holding the actual real book in your hand.
I know, that's true. And I do have a Nook, and so I have a lot of e-books downloaded, and I even downloaded my own, of course. But just to hold the Nook in my hand and have the cover there for a split second as I flip the page, I mean, it's just not the same as having the actual book in your hand. Now, I think with my students, you know, for example, who are about 15, 16 years old, they are actually reading books on their phone. And so for them, and they've been doing this for a while, the idea of having a book in their hand doesn't quite mean as much to I think, some of the readers that did not grow up having, you know, a Nook available right away. So it's been a change. So
yeah,
we're in the generation that still likes the paper in our hand.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. Just there's something magical about holding a book. And I think it's sad that it's going the way with the dodo because It is, you know, people died for the right to print a book, and now it's disappearing. It's just kind of sad.
I know, it is. In fact, when Entangled first acquired Mirror X and the trilogy. The other two books are not written yet. Well, one's written, but the third one's not. They told me it was going to go out as an e-book, and they weren't sure if they were going to do it in print. And so I was like, oh, man, you know, because you want to have that book in your hand. But
yeah.
They have so many authors that do signings that, you know, you need to have the physical book. And there is a way electronically, and I don't know how to do it, but you can actually sign an e-book, like someone can
mm-hmm.
email you. There's a program that does it. I don't know anything about it. But even so, to me, an electronic signature, even though the person's doing it with an electronic pen, it is not the same as having an actual book with it signed. So
yeah.
Entangled's been great in terms of really trying to get the print books out there for their authors so they can do signings and they can have the book sitting on their bookshelf. That's another thing, too, like a series that I really love, like Lord of the Rings and Harry Potter and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
I love those hardcovers sitting on my bookshelf. They're kind of like little trophies, and you can't do that with an e-book.
They're sitting right next to me, my Harry Potters.
Oh, Harry Potter,
I actually have them all on my desk in this, what do you call it, you know, the holder.
Right.
And I didn't have any room on my bookshelf for them all, and I was like, well, I'll put it on my desk. So they're actually all sitting right next to me.
Yeah, it's actually, you know, having a collection of books like that, it's like a decoration in a way, you know. So it is nice to have my books on my shelf so I can see them.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree. I love a hard copy. I think they're
mm-hmm.
special. Talking about reading and Harry Potter and books like that, what kind of books ignite your imagination? What, not that makes you write like them, but what is it that just makes you go wow when you're reading it? What kind of a book?
Oh, something that's just creative, inventive, hasn't been done over and over again. I think that's, you know, the beauty of Harry Potter is that was so original.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the whole concept and the idea. You know, we've got some basic plot elements that have been used, you know, again, the idea of, you know, someone being a little bit different, and so other people look at them differently and they may not be treated the same. You know, we have that same basic concept, but to have it take place, you know, at a wizard school, and just the whole thing just blows me away. Even how she has certain characters, their names fit their personality. So she really took a lot of time figuring out, you know, based on how this character is going to behave and their basic personality, what name goes along with that. So I just think it's awesome. So anything that's new and original, like that just really fascinates me. Anything that takes me directly into that world and wants me to actually be a part of it. Lord of the Rings does a great job of doing that. I mean, who wouldn't want to go to Middle Earth and stay there, not for a long period of time, because I would miss all of our modern conveniences. But,
yes.
You know, just the book just takes you into that world. And when you're done, you wish you could go there for a little while. And so things like that, I really, you know, I really love sci-fi, fantasy, paranormal. And so those are the kind of things, the elements I like to see, original ones that really fascinate me.
Yeah, I agree. She's like one of my heroes, Jo Rawlings, but one of the things I like is that she created an entire world. I mean, she
mm-hmm.
knows everything that happened before and after. She could write 20 books with the stuff that she wrote. You know, I mean,
and
she wrote it so fast.
She had that in her head and it just came out. I was in England in April and I went on this tour. It was actually the Jack the Ripper tour. You know, all the places where they show you where all the death occurred. Horrible, I know, but a group of people I was with wanted to do this tour. And it was interesting walking through London at night. But they pointed out certain places that they used to film Harry Potter. And so I thought that was really cool. We got to see the alley where Diagon Alley, where that's filmed. Of course, they do a lot of computer animation and stuff to fill it all in, but we saw that alley. We saw the bridge that the night bus goes across, and
mm-hmm.
I forgot which movie that's in. And it was
Isn't
great
that Tower
seeing
bridge?
That stuff, too.
Wasn't
what
Tower
was it
Tower Bridge? Wasn't it Tower Bridge?
Was.
That they went
probably
over?
Probably was. Yeah, it might have been. I saw so many sites when I was there that I don't even remember the names of half the stuff that I saw, because we were with a tour group, so it was like, this day you're doing this, and we saw this many things, and next day you're doing this. So, yeah, I'm sure that's probably what it was with Tower Bridge. And we also went to, why can't I think of the name of the university? I think this was actually...
Cambridge, Oxford?
No.
Those are the two I know.
Remember. But they had this hall called the Long Hall. It's where the Book of Kells is. I think this was actually in Ireland. I can't think of the name of the hall. But and I bought a shirt from there, too, and I still can't remember the name. But they have this long hall where they house all their books, and that was the hall that they used to film the dining hall in Harry Potter. So that was really,
really?
Cool. I love those books. And so it was interesting. Go ahead.
I thought it was in Scotland.
Scotland, I think that's where they filmed like a lot of the cat. They used the castles there, but in Ireland, at the particular college, is where they have this long hall that they use for the dining hall scenes.
Oh, cool!
Just for those scenes, yeah.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It was great.
I just love the whole concept. I mean, it's just really cool. I was kind of ginky when I went to England. I had to go see where Sherlock Holmes lived.
Oh, yeah, I saw that too.
220B Baker Street. Because they actually have a little museum. I mean, he was a fictional character.
They do. They have a statue.
Yeah.
Right.
I was like, I went up there and I was like, oh, this is cool.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's really authentic. I mean, they did a great job.
It is. It is.
Yeah, that's one fun thing about somebody told me, because I was a travel agent at the time, they said, don't act like a tourist. I go, I may never go back to Europe. I'm going to act like a tourist.
No, I was a total tourist.
Yeah, pictures.
I did all
work.
The touristy things.
Care.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And now if I ever go back, which I hopefully will someday, I know what I want to spend more time on, because I've done like all the touristy stuff, you know, in a few days. Now I can go back and really enjoy it and not be the tourist. So that'll be my next trip.
Yeah, if I ever get a go. I definitely want to go back, because there's parts of England that I didn't get to. And I did get to Ireland or Scotland. I didn't get to go to either Oxford or Cambridge. I really wanted to see those. You know,
I went to
Oxford. Only have so long.
Right. That's true.
You know? But, yeah, I love that. Since we're talking about England, do you have a love of history, and does that have any part when you write your books?
I do. I haven't written, like, what would be considered, like, historical romance or anything like that, but I did go to Germany 2 years ago, and that trip really meant a lot to me, because my grandmother had passed away 2 years before that. And she actually came to the United States right after World War II. She married an American soldier, and she had lost her husband in the war. So kind of that, and she had two kids. One of them was my mother. And so to get out of Germany, basically, she married an American soldier, and he brought her here. And that marriage didn't end up lasting, but, you know, brought my mom here, and now I'm here because of it. But my grandmother never made it back to Germany. And when she passed away, I said, okay, I'm going to take her ashes back. So was it 2 years ago? 2-3 years ago, I took her ashes back to Germany. And while I was there, I did, of course, all the touristy things. But it really made me look deeper into, you know, what happened during the Holocaust. You know, I had read Diary of Anne Frank, and I was familiar, but I did more research into it. And I'm actually writing a book right now called Ashes on the Rhine, as in the Rhine River.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm doing a lot of research back into World War II and prior to that, when my grandmother lived there as a child. And so I like looking back at that history, especially because I have a connection to it. And hopefully, and I've got so many writing projects going on right now, but hopefully I'll get to finish that one, because that's really dear to my heart, and hopefully my agent will be able to sell it and it'll get published, because you never know. I could write it and it might just end up sitting there.
I know.
But we'll see what happens. But yeah, no, I love history. in high school, I loved history. I took honors history, and in college, I had to take, you know, some classes. I majored in English, so I had to take some history classes. But, yeah, I've always liked the idea of, you know, looking back at the past and see how we don't repeat things that happened that were not a good thing, but that we can also, you know, learn from the mistakes of the past. And ancient history really fascinates me. I teach the Odyssey. And actually, in my second book, without giving too much away, it's called Hollywood Angels. This is a different series compared to the Mirror X that just came out. There's actually a lot of references to Greek mythology because that's something I really love.
Yeah, that's one of my passions. Greek and Egyptian mythology are just
fascinating. Oh, gosh, wouldn't you love to go back in time and just stay there for a short time?
Just a short time.
I don't know if I can handle it.
I don't want to stay there forever.
No, it would be difficult.
Well, that's why I wrote Time Travel Book. I mean, why I wrote Fantasy Time Inc. was because I love the idea of just being able to go back in time. That's always fascinating. Mm-hmm. Since I was a little girl, the first thing I ever saw was The Time Machine, the movie with Rod Taylor. And that just captured me. And I had to read the book, and then I read everything I could get my hands on about time travel. I mean, I think that's a fascinating concept.
It is. It is. What was that movie I saw as a kid? Kind of cheesy because of special effects. It was a Journey to the Center of the Earth, and I think they redid it now. But seeing it, the original one as a kid, you know, with the claymation dinosaurs, I think there were dinosaurs in there. Yeah, that idea of being able to go back in time and, you know, study it, that would just be amazing. Yeah, we could do that. Maybe someday. I don't know if I believe in the theory of time travel.
I don't know. I think it's a fascinating... Well, my favorite one is There's No Machine, Somewhere in Time, where he thinks himself back in time.
Oh, I know. That was Christopher Reeve.
Yeah, the late, great Christopher
Reeve. Oh, yeah.
I loved
him. And I love the theme song to that movie. It's great, too.
Yeah, you can't get it out of your head once you see it. It's just such a beautifully done movie with such amazing actors. Because for those younger people... it's called Somewhere in Time. The late Richard Matheson, he just recently died, wrote it. It is about a guy who falls in love with a portrait and goes back in time. And the portrait is Jane Seymour.
Right.
And Christopher Plummer is in it, too. And it's great.
Oh, that's right.
Excellent.
Mm-hmm.
Movie.
It is a great movie.
Highly recommend.
Mm-hmm.
It
might even be on Netflix.
Yeah, I think it is. I think it is. It's a wonderful film. I'm a romantic, so. And I read the book, and I had bought the book years and years ago, and then Richard Matheson was signing What Dreams May Come. So I brought Somewhere in Time. It has Jane Seymour and Christopher Reeve on the cover. So I go, he signed my copy of What Dreams May Come, and I said, could you sign this too? And he looked at me, and he looked up, and he said, how long have you had this? And I go, since the movie came out. I had to read the book. And he goes, good girl. And he signed a really nice thing to me.
Aww.
But, yeah, so I did meet the great man.
Oh, that's great. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I was so sad when I heard he passed.
Mm-hmm.
So we've come to the time for you to talk about Mirror X. Why don't you tell the audience a little bit about it and what you'd like them to take away from it?
Okay. So Mirror X is completely different from my Angels book series. That's a fun, paranormal, makes you laugh, makes you cry. Mirror X is a little more controversial. It is a young adult novel. But my publisher even told me, you know, and my editor that, you know, there are some things in here that might make people's stomachs kind of turn, so I can't tell you what those are, but it's just very different from my Angel books, which are so kind of lighthearted. So Mirror X is a science fiction. It takes place 1003, and people ask me, how did you come up with 1003? I'm like, I don't know. It's just 1003 years in the future, and the main character, her name is Cassie. She's 17. And she has been homeschooled because her mother is a paleontologist. And her mother travels around the world on digs, and she brings Cassie with her. And so Cassie's been homeschooled, and Cassie also, you know, has been exposed to the world of paleontology and helps out her mom, and so is very familiar with that. It's basically self-taught. On her, in her spare time, she reads like science magazines that some of the grad students have. So she's very mature for her age. Unfortunately, she gets killed in a helicopter crash, but her grandfather, who's very eccentric, has her preserved with a cryogenic company. And I had to do a lot of research on that, and it's hard to believe that we actually have cryogenic facilities in the United States that people can put their loved ones in, but they really do exist. So she's in this frozen state, and 1,003 years from the date of her death, she gets awakened. And the world is very, very different. It's divided up into three regions with three different presidents. It's a society that would like to portray itself as being a utopian society, but of course with power there's always corruption, and the society is not exactly the way it appears in the beginning. She's, you know, without family and friends, and you know, completely disheartened in this new world where paleontology doesn't even exist. This world looks toward the future rather than even looking back at the past. There's something about her that makes her very different from everybody else, and everybody else, of course, is very different from her. But in the beginning, she doesn't know what that is. But the thing that this thing makes her very valuable to this society. So I can't tell you what this thing is because that'll ruin the story. But after she, like, a bunch of secrets are revealed, although there are more twists and turns that happen later, but when the major secrets are revealed and she knows what's going on, she has to make a decision, although the decision's kind of forced upon her. And this is where we get into some of the issues that are a little more controversial, because it deals with, without saying too much, deals with genetics and different ethical issues when it comes to that. And I have a few scenes that some people said were a little bit hard to read, which I take that as a compliment, because that means that it was descriptive enough the way I described it, where it did make people emotional. But basically, Cassie, as a 17-year-old girl, you have to look at it from her point of view in terms of why she reacts the way she does. You know, a 17-year-old girl would react differently to the situation than a 25-year-old woman or a 30-year-old woman. And so you have to really look at how she reacts and understand that as a 17-year-old girl, you know, this is how I think a 17-year-old would react. There's also, of course, romance. And one of the doctors there, he's a geneticist. He's actually only 20 years old, and there's a reason why he's only 20. It makes sense. If you read the book, you'll know why. And, of course, you know, he's been kind of smitten with her ever since he saw her in her cryogenic chamber, because she is naturally beautiful. And a romance does develop, but, of course, there's always there's additional lies and cover-ups and other things that happen that, again, like I said, lots of twists and turns. And it's just a great story. I guess that's all I can really say without giving away too much. But it's just, I love it, and I'm really excited about it. And it ends not with a cliffhanger. You know, it is a series. I know a lot of people hate when a book ends directly with a cliffhanger, because it's like, what? Now I got to wait a year for the next book. So it does have a nice ending, even though the story does continue. So it is one of those books you read. You still want to read the next one, but it's not like it leaves you, you know, mad that the book is ended and that the author did that. So the second book is written.
I have a friend who actually wrote one and got a lot of kind of angry email. How can you have such a cliffhanger?
Right. Right. And it is fun to end with a big cliffhanger, because then you do want people to go, wow, I want to read the next book. But, yeah, you don't want to make people too angry. So mine ends, I think, in a nice way, so that you feel satisfied, but you still want to find out what's going to happen. So book two is written, and it's ready to be on my editor's desk. I have a couple more things I need to do with it. And book three is in my head. So I need to work on that. But since I'm a teacher and I'm off this summer, well, you know what I'll be doing.
You'll be
working on that along with another sci-fi that I wrote. So like I said, I've got so many projects going on because I have all these stories I want to get out. So I'm working about 8 hours a day just writing and editing. But it's been great.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah, that's what we do. That's what part of being a writer.
Yeah.
What is your biggest? Oh, I'm sorry. I was going to say, what is your biggest satisfaction when you complete a book such as Mirror X?
Oh, when I finish writing it.
Yeah.
Okay. Just the fact that I got through. See, I'm one of those writers. I don't plot the whole thing out like on any kind of chart or any kind of beat sheet or anything like that. I just have the story in my head and I just write. And it takes me about 3 months to get through it. Now, it's obviously going to be really rough, and I have to go through and edit and make changes and so forth, and I have critique partners that go through it with me. But it's just when you get to the end, you're like, whoa, I did it. So the whole story is basically there. And so you've got the meat of it ready to go, and now you just have to do all the little tweaks and things like that. But, yeah, it's very satisfying finishing a book.
Yeah, I'm like that, too. I don't have, I do have one-on-one book because it's my first series. So I do have sort of like not a guideline but notes so I don't mess up the who's who and where's who and how they are related.
Oh, yeah,
I do
have to keep track. Yeah.
Charts like that.
I do have notes like that.
Yeah, but I have no idea how any of my books are going to end until I get to the end.
Yeah. That's how I like to write. It just works best for me, so that's how I do it.
I think that's cool. I think it's more generic. Yeah. Generic, that's not what I mean. I mean more part of you. For some reason,
mm-hmm.
my mind's blanking out. More a part of your soul when you write that way. That's the way I look at it.
Just write straight from your head and your heart right there.
Yeah,
go.
Exactly. We don't have a lot of time left. Could you tell us about what you can, about what the new projects that you were mentioning that you're working on now?
Oh, yeah. I have a science fiction. It's another young adult that I'm working on. I'm making some changes that my editor suggested, and then I'm going to send it back to him. Hopefully, we'll take this one on because I'm rereading it again right now, and I just love it too. And I don't really have a title for that one yet. And then I have the Ashes on the Rhine book, which takes place in Germany, which is more of a contemporary young adult romance. And that's what I'm working on. I do want to say that I love talking to fellow authors and aspiring writers and readers. So if anybody, it took me a long time to kind of learn this business. I kind of did it on my own. So if anybody has any questions about anything, they can email me and they can find my email. They can contact me through my website, which is www.carithompson.com. So it's just my first and last name together, K-A-R-I. THOMPSON.com, and through there they can contact me because I love interacting with people and sharing everything that I know. So if anybody would like to do that, I'm available for that. And I also want to say that Mirror X, my publisher, has it for the first 2 weeks, I think, for only 99 cents for the download right now. So at Amazon and Barnes & Noble, it's only 99 cents.
Wow.
So if people
are
interested, I would love it if they'd read it. And then give me feedback. I'd love to hear what they think about it.
Yeah, yeah. I'll have it all written up on my blog, and I'll have your website. So if anybody wants to contact you through the show, through my blog, then they can do that too. Do you have any events coming up?
I don't have any right now. I'm trying to get some book signing scheduled again because the book's not in print yet. It's more difficult to get those set up because it depends on when my publisher's distributor is going to start having those in print. So I don't have anything like that coming up yet. I'm hoping to. But I constantly, you know, post updates and things on my website. I wish I could say, hey, I'm going to be at this bookstore on this day, but I don't have anything actually, you know, set in stone yet. Some things are kind of being worked on. But okay. On my website, I will always have it updated.
Okay, cool. But it'll be updated on your website when you do have one.
Right. It'll be under, I have like an appearances tab, and it lists things I'm going to do. And I constantly, you know, talk about things on my Facebook page. I have an author page people can like, and then I tweet about events, too.
Great. I told you it would be fast. We've come to the end.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate it.
Oh, yeah, thank you. Like I said, I love talking about my books and writing in general and talking with fellow authors, so this has been great.
Thank you. I just want my audience to know that next week we're going to have cinematographer Jerry Williams. He's an independent video and filmmaker for over 27 years, and he's going to be talking about his latest projects. I'd like my live audience to thank Carrie for a great interview. Thanks, Carrie.
Thank you.
And thank you for chatting with Sherry.